So what are the three areas of the home that are most likely to have mold?
Behind a dishwasher is a common one because the leak will be subtle under a sink. Bathrooms, of course, are always going to be a source of moisture because of hot showers. What people should really do is look for...
Clorox does not kill mold.
No, it's not what you want to use for mold remediation. Mold is super resilient, and you're not going to kill it with fungicides or chemicals like Decon, not effectively. You don't want to try to have some company come out and spray some type of antifungal fog.
Mm-hmm.
If your goal is to get rid of the mold, you remove the mold.
Mm-hmm.
You don't kill it. Mold is not your enemy. Mold is doing its job. Unfortunately, your house, something's wrong, and it's your cue to fix that. But you're not going to kill the mold by fogging it. You're just going to make it more volatile. You're going to make it release more mycotoxins because you're just going to, frankly, piss it off, and it's going to try to protect itself just like you would if somebody came in and tried to rob you.
What are three things they can do to feel better after being mold sick?
Number one.
Dr. Peter, welcome to the Non-Toxic Living Podcast. We've known each other a long time. You have an amazing journey of healing, of hope, getting sick again, loss. You've just been through a lot. And from that, you have so much wisdom, so much love to help others. And I want you to share that with everyone here today. And let's start with a few of your stories. And you've been through so many challenges. And I really want to use those challenges and share it with people so that they can have hope and experience the transformation they deserve, especially when it comes to the topic of mold illness and a lot of these other chronic diseases that are just ruining lives, and it really shouldn't have to be that way.
Yeah, mold is a tough one. My family was in mold for a couple of years before we realized it was mold that was creating the illness. But my the first thing that really happened that really cued us to a major problem was our dog died.
Mm-hmm.
Our little Yorkie, it's our family dog. Her name is Maggie. And what happened at first was, you know, she was a major foodie.
Mm-hmm.
That was the way you could train her. You could give her a treat and she'd flip over, play dead, all the things, right? She just didn't want to eat. She's really non-responsive to treats, to food. A lot of times she'd throw her food up. You'd take her to the vet and want to do exploratory. I'm like, you're not exploring on my dog.
Yeah.
So her appetite's just kind of caving in. And then, you know, it wasn't much longer after that. She started, when she was walking around, she started bumping into walls and just her vision was going and very rapidly. And then it wasn't long after that that we lost her. That was our kind of first clue.
Mm-hmm.
She was our canary.
The canary, Nicole, mine, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, kind of simultaneously, but not as aggressively, my wife was just tired. You know, just tired. And, you know, our background and with our family, we've practiced what we've preached. So we're healthy. We eat well. All the things anyone's ever heard me say in any of my videos or any of my books or anything else, we practice it.
Mm-hmm.
And, but she was on the couch. She struggled to get up, struggled to get off the couch. Then her memory started to go. And so it would be like we would try to have conversations and I was trying to guess at what the word was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew the word, she just couldn't get it to her lips.
So frustrating.
Yeah. And so it was really hard on our relationship. And, you know, ultimately, she just didn't want to be alive anymore. And that was at the peak of mold for her, like symptom-wise. She wasn't suicidal. She just was apathetic. She's like, why are we here? What's it for? My son had rashes just pop up all over his body that he would run random fevers for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not for no reason, but for no discernible reason as to why. And then I was super tired. I mean, I'm a 4:35 a.m. guy, and I was struggling to get out of bed at 7:30. I gained weight. I had cherry angioma, little cherry dots popping up all over my skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just get real weepy. I would just cry out of nowhere for no reason.
You're reminding me of all the symptoms of mold illness that I had, and some of them, it's making me emotional. Just remembering, like, just crying for no reason. My gosh. And I don't think everybody knows, but you taught functional medicine doctors on how to help mold sick patients. You knew this information and you still had a moldy house and it still got you. So it doesn't discriminate on the amount of knowledge and wisdom you have. It's still a silent killer in your home. And it even affected somebody who got past somebody who knows. Like, I would consider you an expert in mold illness, and you probably helped so many people get their houses remediated and it was hiding in your walls. But continue with the knife twisting into my heart, because it's just, it's so sad to me, because I remember those feelings and I know that people listening have those same feelings, and it does destroy marriages. I did a docuseries, Homesick Home, which you know about, with Dr. Pedram, and you can see in both the homes that we did the docuseries, they pretty much, there were some of them were kind of still fighting on it, and then some of them are also admitting like we had to separate, but it was the mold in the house that was destroying their nervous system, that was making them reactive, and then one is not as sick as the other, and the bottom falls out, and it was literally not a bad marriage, it was a sick home.
Yeah, for sure. It has its way on the mind. You know, it's a neurotoxin. You know, in our home, it was a new home. We just built it when we found mold the first time, and it was an ice maker. It was improperly connected, and so it was leaking into the floor, and we had a tremendous amount of mold growing in like a pony wall. And that was found relatively quick. Nobody got sick at that point. But that was our first kind of obvious water damage to the home. But that first year we had...
Was this a new home?
Brand new. Brand new homes are not immune. As a matter of fact, I would argue that brand new homes are probably more problematic than, say, homes built in the 80s, mm-hmm. simply because quality of labor, quality of workmanship. You had better quality in those days than you do now.
When it was a local contractor, it wasn't a big, you know, corporate owned company who had a reputation in town to build a nice home. It wasn't these big builders that just stamp out homes.
No, it was a custom home builder.
Oh, you had a custom home build?
Yeah. And yeah, it was our, you know, we got some land and we have a farm. And so this was kind of what we...
The dream.
What we were wanting. It was our dream. And that first year we had... Oh, probably close to a dozen calls in on the HVAC system, because it just wouldn't cool. It wouldn't heat properly, wouldn't cool properly, but ultimately it wouldn't dehumidify properly. So what happened in our house was all the construction defects led to an accumulation of moisture. There was no, aside from the lice maker, it was predominantly aerosolized moisture. So it wasn't like obvious pipe leaks, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the HVAC system was so botched that it couldn't keep up with the humidity. And their solution to that was to lie to us and to adjust the humidity digitally so that it looked like it was below 55%. And so basically lied. We didn't find that out until later when we had forensic analysis done. We brought in our own HVAC experts, two of them, just to get two differing opinions that matched. And then we brought in a forensic architect and a forensic building guy who they did deconstruction on different aspects of the home to try to discern why the mold grew. And honestly, it grew for every reason that mold could grow. They made mistakes. So think of it as the death by 1,000 cuts. Every corner you could cut that would allow for moisture penetration into the home pretty much happened with our build. I think it was God, honestly. Prior us experiencing mold, I actually prayed that God would quit sending chronically mold sick patients to my clinic, because they're tough. They're tough cases for many reasons, mostly psychological ones.
Yeah.
You know, people don't want to believe that mold is the problem. People don't want to believe their house is killing them.
Yeah. It is tough.
You get the whole psychology game, and sometimes people are offended. You know, they're good housekeepers or good house cleaners, but they think mold is dirty.
Yeah.
And so then they take offense. There's just a thousand scenarios of
one. And when it's mold and it's your home sick, it's the very sanctuary of psychology in America. You have your little home and it's your safety. And that's kind of on purpose with the psychology of building America is getting the homes. And if you take that away from someone, it's the psychological belief. It's almost like if you're a medical doctor realizing that, hey, maybe the medications I'm putting people on, right, are actually hurting and not helping. If you're a dentist and you're putting mercury, mouth, and fillings in, and to believe that those actually are poison, and they are, it's a fact. That's why they're banned in other countries. And I stick a meter in your mouth, you know, it's like, it's a fact, but they don't want to believe it because it undermines their security financially. And but a home's even more of a challenge because you're undermining, depending on someone's personality, their safety. But that's why it's so important because it is a clean home's either, I mean, a safe home's either going to make you, help you heal and rest. It's your second skin, you know, besides your real skin, it's the thing that's protecting you from the outdoor environment. It's your cave. And if your cave is moldy, there's no happiness in your life.
Yeah. It definitely. So for us, it was that first year, all the HVAC calls, health slowly deteriorating, my dog getting sick, my wife getting sick, my son getting sick, me getting sick. I was probably the least affected because I was there the least, which is very common. It's about dose and time of exposure. So, you know, my wife stays home. My son stays home. It was during COVID, so he was really staying home.
Ugh.
Yeah. And, but by the time we found it, we had been through, you know, several inspections. Several were by the builder's inspector because our house was still, you know, under the limitation of the warranty. So they brought out their own mold inspector who found mold. They found 9,200, I think was the number of Aspergillus and Penicillium in the air.
That's a big number.
Yeah, it's a big number. Anything really over 500 is high. So we were at 9,200. They tried to gaslight us. Their solution was to scrub the air and then to repeat an air test.
Oh, gee.
You know, immediately after turning off the air scrubber, like, no shit, that was what they tried to pull on us. And at that point,
Didn't they know that you were a physician?
They did. And I had, I had many meetings, you know, with my concerns about mold and water intrusion potential. You know, and it's the same old story probably most people get when they're trying to build a home. Oh, yeah, we're going to build a great home for you. None of our homes have mold in them. We do a great job. At the end of the day, I'll never do it that way again. And actually, we rebuilt a home at this point where we...
And you just moved in this week,
yeah,
right?
Yep. We micromanaged.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. We micromanaged the whole process with experts to try to avoid another complication, because that's another big factor is people get out of mold into mold. And I didn't want to repeat this. So.
Oh, and it's so hard. I've seen that with... we had that, I had a functional medicine coaching company for all those years. And so we hear all these horror stories and someone would move, change their life, get rid of all their furniture, you know, and start over and get tricked.
Yep.
And not have the right inspector, the right expert to come in and test the new home, or they moved emotionally and then they have to do it all over again. And then the financial devastation, like it's sad even talking about it. Right. And you have to continue to work. It's probably, in my opinion, and I think you may agree, it's probably one of the mold, is one of the greatest insults to human's health, especially in America because of building practices.
Yeah.
I think it
yeah.
causes more chronic disease than almost anything else. I mean, I, you could eat a crappy diet and still be healthy. You can't live in a moldy home unless you have really strong detox genetics,
which even then it's a matter of time.
Yeah. It's a matter of time. People say, oh, I'm not mold sensitive. Everyone is sensitive to a toxin. It's like, you can't drink arsenic and expect not to eventually die. Like it will kill you. Some people detox it better than others, but it's eventually going to, you know, do what it's meant to do, which is take you out, then feed off you.
Yeah. Yep.
That's kind of funny. I mean, I guess that's its goal, right?
Yeah. Mold is definitely insidious. And By the time we got our own inspector, and what's interesting is, again, we had four inspections. Two of those four were positive, even by our builder, who, you know, they don't want to find it. But when we brought in our own person, like 5 minutes, they found photographic evidence of mold growing behind our walls. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't.
And that's hard to find, by the way. Like, just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah.
It can be a type of mold that's kind of microscopic or clear, might look like dust.
It looks like geographic, or not geographic, but geometric patterns of dust on the posterior aspect of sheetrock. So if you put a nice fiber optic camera behind the wall cavity with the right high penetrance LED type of light, you can actually see almost like fractal patterns of growth. And that they found it, you know, very quickly. So they knew it was a problem. Then I had them come back out and do a full forensic eval where they took wall cavity samples and they took swab samples and tape lifts and, you know, additional testing, including HVAC investigation and forensic deconstruction of the home to determine where moisture was coming in, why. We had, when we did wall cavity samples versus regular air samples, pretty much no less than, I don't remember exactly the numbers, I don't have them here in front of me, but it was like 30,000 or more, and depending on the wall cavity. And some wall cavities were multiple hundreds of thousands of you know, spores. Aspergillus, Penicillium, Cotomium, Stachybotrys. So all the bad stuff.
All water damage molds.
Yeah, and then they used a smoke device to determine whether or not our walls were breathing all that stuff into our living space. And you could follow the smoke, and it was just coming out of the wall cavity right into our breathing space. So once we knew, like the day we had that first inspection done where they gave us evidence, we left the house. We just walked out, clothes on our back, stayed in an extended stay hotel for 2 months. That's where we lived. And
you have no choice because everything you have is contaminated, making you sick. You need new clothes. You need new furniture. If you can't wipe it down, you're done.
Well, I've had enough experience with people dying in mold. It's probably one of the few things prior to the pandemic that I've seen people actually die from in my practice who refused to leave it. And I wasn't about to keep my family in an environment that
you were losing your wife.
Yeah. So
surprised she didn't get an autoimmune condition or something.
Well, she recovered really well. Once we got out, within about 2 months, she was speaking really well again. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but like she could recall words. She could finish sentences. Her energy had improved. My son's rashes completely disappeared. He no longer got fevers. His stomach quit hurting because he had a tremendous amount of just random stomach pain. And I quit crying. And, you know, we all had a semblance of hope and health back to a certain extent. We just then at that point needed to figure out what the next steps needed to be because yeah, you've walked out of your house. You don't have anything. You have, the ability to live in this hotel, unfortunately. But what's the next step? So for us, it was we bought a mobile home and we moved in next door. We thought this is a short-term solution. Naively believed that the justice system would swiftly help us, reconcile it.
It's toxic too.
Yeah, it is. And
quite toxic.
And it was also during COVID. So like try during a pandemic to get people to coordinate, lawyers to coordinate.
Got every excuse on the book at this point.
Everybody.
Push things off.
1 week they got COVID. The next week they're recovering from COVID. The next week their family members got COVID. It just.
You can write everything. Yeah. You can't. It's. Yeah.
Yeah.
During that time, all you got to do is mention COVID and you can get out of anything.
Right. Yeah. So by the time we get our day in court, it'll be almost 6 years. And you know, a year ago or so we said, we finally realized that this isn't going to be swift. We're not going to wait on that to happen. We couldn't tear down our house because it's evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So what we decided to do, we live on a farm. So we just decided to build a barn, and inside the barn, we call it a barn dominium. So basically it's a small home within a barn, and we had it constructed with several experts who were experts in airflow and air movement.
Is it going to be your home?
It's going to be my home net for now.
Yeah. So people can stay there. It's like an outbuilding that someone can stay and be safe, and then you can turn the rest into a gym or a barn.
Yeah.
Do you live on the first floor? Or do you live?
Yeah, it's just one story. It's a small barn dominium, and so.
You might just stay.
We might. That's the whole thing.
The bigger homes, people think bigger homes are better. They're just more responsibility, more things can go wrong, more ways for mold and water damage to leak in. you know, just more problems, right?
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, for sure. You know, we're just happy to move on and get out of the trailer. We went through.
I grew up in a trailer. Hurricane, I loved my trailer.
Hurricane Beryl last year came through, and my wife was visiting her parents in Missouri, and my son was with her, and so I was there by myself, in this trailer during the hurricane, and the whole thing is moving and shaking.
Of course, yeah.
You've got all these sounds, right? And what happened, I didn't know until the next day, but a tornado came through the property. So it wasn't just a hurricane. It was a tornado offshoot. Knocked out 11 big mature trees on the property.
Oh, man, it's a big tornado.
Yeah, big tornado. And I was like, that's why it was so loud. That's why it sounded so ominous. And it was after that, I'm like, we're not staying here. I'm not going to be stuck.
You're in Texas. Tornadoes in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're on the coast, so we get hurricanes and tornadoes. So we kind of, both aspects of great wind, you know.
But, you need to move. I'm teasing.
Yeah, yeah.
But before you continue with the story, I want people to back up. Like, in the building industry, they're not on your side. They don't like mold. Builders don't like mold. They don't want to take responsibility for their actions. Their contracts suck. You know, and they're all these things that you don't know about legal and contracts because they've been through legal disputes. They changed their contracts to put it in their favor that you can't sue. They put arbitration clauses. They do everything to protect them, not to protect you. So you can't trust your builder, even if it's your friend. You need to have a lawyer review your building contract and say, hey, if this goes to litigation and they screw up, who's responsible? You got to hold people accountable today. It's just no way around it because most people are. And so when it comes to mold, you go to buy a home, they do an air sample. They could have scrubbed it before they took it. And sometimes the mold doesn't get into the living space, but it's still in the wall. Or it's not, that day it was low. It was a low moisture day, or the air pressure and the barometric pressure was putting pressure so that stuff was moving out. It wasn't high barometric pressure where it was pushing air into your home, like a balloon or a plastic bag or whatever, right? Depending on the day. So the mold testing's inferior today, right? You had to do forensic analysis.
Yeah, I think the mistake people make when they're hiring a mold inspector is to hire someone who's undertrained and doesn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And they come out and they rely on air sampling as the primary tool for investigation. Air sampling it's like running a CBC on a person with chronic autoimmune disease. Good luck. They're going to have a normal CBC 9 out of 10 times. And the doctor's going to look at him and say, oh, your blood work looks good. You must be healthy or crazy.
Mm-hmm. That was me.
Yeah.
That's probably.
Yeah. And that's what air testing is. So air testing can be valuable if you find it, but the propensity for it to be falsely negative is very high. According to the WHO, the World Health Organization, they have a whole section on dampness, building dampness and mold. And if you read it, you know, their own statement is you need a minimum of 27 air tests to successfully assess an indoor airspace. And so most of these guys, they come in, they do an outdoor control sample. Mm. They do maybe one or two samples on the inside of your house. There's no real visual inspection. They're not using thermal cameras. They're not using hygrometers or humidity measurements. Mm-hmm. They're not doing surface sampling or
dust sampling,
MSQ PCR. They're really just not being thorough. But the average person doesn't understand mold, and it doesn't understand these things. And
you're in emotion. You want to buy a house. You want it to be mold free.
Yeah.
Because you want to move in. You love the property. You love the garden. You love the pool. And you emotionally make a decision that's literally could take your life.
Yeah. Absolutely. So. You have to be careful. I would say if you're building a house, don't sign an arbitration clause. And most of the big box builders won't build your house if you don't sign it. Not to me, to like take away their business, like let them feel the pain of the financial loss of not being able to sell crappy homes to a bunch of innocent people who are, you know, most people are going to spend in it when they invest in their home. It's the biggest investment they're going to have, right? Yeah. So financially, It can ruin a family. It can devastate a family. So protect yourself on the front end. Don't sign an arbitration clause. We had an arbitration clause. I didn't know this before, right? I didn't. you know, I wasn't experienced in that way. So our last build, our most recent one, we took out the arbitration clause. I refused to hire anybody who would make us or put us in a position where we wouldn't have a trial by jury. Because the jury trial is going to be, you know, you got to understand who arbitrators are. Arbitrators are usually lawyers or judges. And in an arbitration scenario, many of these arbitrators get a lot of their business from the building industry. So they may not receive the money directly under the table for a nod and a wink, but is their decision going to be influenced by, you know, by a business or by an entity that leads to a lot of their revenue in their profession?
It absolutely will be.
Yeah. I mean, just, it's like direct to consumer pharmacy advertising. Did that affect news? Did that affect radio? Did that affect everything that happened in the last 6 years? Of course it did.
1,000%. We took the concept of PumpSick home to our docuseries. And I know that you're going to bring your docuseries. What's it called? Mold?
Mold Jacked.
Mold Jacked. Love it. So jacked up, like you got mold jacked.
You know? You got mold jacked. Like you got jacked hijacked.
Up. You got jacked up. They literally said, you know, it gets to the root cause of disease, and you know, downy sheets, and you know, the cleaning industry, like all of our sponsors, you know, we'd lose sponsors. It's like, no, there's no way. And they weren't even mean about it. It's just a matter of fact. It's like, no way we can do it, because it's in competition, you know, with their message, and you know, it's going to hurt their numbers, and that's what pays for keeps our doors open and our lights on. You're going to have to find another route, right? So then we had to do, you know, Facebook and Instagram and people like you sending for it to your patients to educate them and clients. So that's not like conspiracy. You know, some things are conspiracy. Although I have to say, you know, things that I thought were conspiracy have now come true. So I've had to eat my own words. I'm like, just money, you know? But, sometimes it's even more than that. So, you know, things that, you know, like chemtrails, like I still have a hard time believing it when I see them in the sky. But now it's a fact. And I don't know how big of a fact it is. I'm sure there's exaggeration on some ends and under exaggeration on others. But, you know, my buddies used to, you know, point at the sky and say, they're killing us. I'm like, come on, it's just a different type of gasoline that they're using now. You know, jet fuel's changed. It doesn't disappear now. And that's probably true. But I think they may be spraying at higher atmospheres. They say that they do now. They say they have evidence. So I don't know. I'm off track. But the bottom line is that, you know, their money does control a lot of this. And the building industry does not like mold. And inspectors don't like mold. They don't like anything that'll kill the deal.
Well, inspectors love charging $500 to do 10 minutes worth of work.
Like it's great. They have great lives.
Yeah. I mean, you can bounce around to 15 houses today, you know, and not really do an inspection, but say you did an inspection. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the air test, right? It's just an over-relied upon technology that was never designed to be the end all be all of whether or not a home or building contain mold. So I think people should know that when they're going into hire, if you're suspecting mold, like don't rely on an air test for the final say. You can do one, but it should just be part of a comprehensive inspection, not the inspection itself. So kind of if you want to queue up, what are the mm-hmm. questions that when you're trying to find mm-hmm. and hire an inspector?
Yeah.
Question number one, do you do wall cavity samples? Question number two, and the answers to all of these need to be yes, right? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, you should just like hang up the phone, don't waste your money. Do you do wall cavity samples? Do you use infrared? Do you have humidity measurement tools where you can measure humidity and hard wall surfaces or mm-hmm. floors? Do you pop open the HVAC and look inside, look at the coil, look at the plenum? Do you walk the house? Do you walk the attic? Do you inspect the perimeter? Do you look on the roof? Do you have an experience in mold litigation? Now, not all of them will, but many of the really good inspectors will have an experience where they are regularly representing legal battles for homeowners who have mold in their home due to faulty construction. So some of those mold inspectors are the best ones to hire because mm-hmm. they have a forensic understanding of how to do it appropriately.
Yeah, there's
Yeah.
Put it this way, there's badass inspectors out there that want to protect you. And they cost more, but they're amazing.
No, they cost less.
They do?
Yes. Because by the time you spend $500 hiring two bad ones, you're still going to end up having to choke out the money to hire a good one if you're trying to build a
case. And from that, you're right. They do kind of, but cost a lot less because your health, medical bills.
Yes.
So you're looking to save money, but this is something you do not chimp out on.
You never cut corners on who you hire as a mold inspector and never cut corners on who you hire as a remediation team if your house can be remediated, if that's a possibility. One interesting thing that we've now seen a few times, and it's relatively new, is the use of mold inspection dogs.
Oh, they're amazing.
Yeah. So we've had a few cases now where, you know, because mold inspection is also not a perfect art. I mean, you can get somebody who's really good, but you can still miss
a ton of things.
Some things. And so it's just another thing that can be done where you bring in a dog that's been trained to sniff out mold. And sometimes they can find areas where there's mold. We had one last week where the dog found a spot near a window that that had mold in it that went undetected because it was inside the wall cavity and there was no water damage evidence around that wall cavity. So
I've heard that story over and over again, mold dogs. Like it's kind of funny, mold dog. I used to think of myself as a mold dog. I think your neurology kind of like, I don't know if you're like that, I can go into a home and I'm like, there's mold in here. And I've seen people like a mold dog identify mold. There's mold over there. Really weird. I don't know what happens, but if a human can do that, and I've seen humans do it, particularly a doctor friend of mine, and how much more can a dog who's sensitive to energies and smells and, you know, I don't know what their senses are, like how many more times, but it's a very effective. It's kind of funny. I think it's one of the best ways to inspect your home. I honestly do.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, I think if you're chronically ill, as many resources as you can afford to help you understand the why aspect around mold, the better. But at any rate, those are the top types of things you really want to ask as far as a mold inspector is concerned. Don't settle for somebody who's just going to run an air test. And really let your hackles be raised when a mold inspector tries to tell you, well, those other tests are kind of expensive and you should just do this. And that means that mold inspector doesn't understand mold illness. If they're not willing,
they're cheaping out on tests to check a box.
Yeah. Yeah. Because remember, they're trying to move on to the next house. That's a lot like a doctor's office. I got to see 30 patients today.
And it's like a real estate agent. Yeah. I want to sell this house and stop, you know, I want to get this deal so I can do the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're not your advocate is my point. You have to be your own advocate. You have to really learn to ask the right questions around mold inspection. And, you know, once you do that and you can get a thorough inspection done, now you have a shot at finding, there's two things you need to understand about what the inspection is designed to do or designed for. The number one reason you get a mold inspection is to find the mold. The number two reason you get it is to find out why the mold grew. And a good mold inspector can answer both of those questions. Because they can find it. A lot of times they'll find it. But if you just remediate it, you don't know why it grew and you don't solve that. It's just going to grow back, right? Mold always grows because of moisture. Your house is mold food. Doesn't matter if it's made out of glass or concrete. It doesn't matter if you've got hemp. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what materials you use your house to be built out of. Mold's gift. God gave the gift of mold to destroy and erode everything and return it back to the soil, given enough time, given enough water as the kind of the fuel source for mold to thrive. So if your house has a moisture issue, whether that be directly just a humidity problem or whether it be some kind of hidden water leak, it's enough to create mold growth. And so that's why you want to know why the mold grew. Where's the water coming from? You know, for a lot of homes, what we see clinically in our patients is it's in the HVAC. Mm-hmm. The HVACs are either oversized. So what happens when you put a big old HVAC system on a small house, people think bigger is better, right? You cool the house so quickly that it can't be properly dehumidified because the houses are built so tight that they cool quickly and they're so energy efficient, they hold on to that cool a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is that AC kicks on, it may run 10 minutes in the hour, but it's supposed to run kind of consistently to dehumidify the air in the home, especially if you live in a climate where there is more humidity. So,
I take this so serious. That's why I moved to lower humid. That's why I moved to Utah, because I didn't want to fight mold anymore. Because if you get a water damage in a home, it's so hard in Pennsylvania because of the humidity just to knock it down. So you need to get it, you know, if you have something gets wet, you need to get it below 50% in like 12 hours. It's not even 24 hours. You're getting mold growth.
Yeah.
And so it was so hard for me. I'm like, I'm out. So I was kind of teasing when you should move. Maybe you should. No, I keep going back. You're like, I just built my dream home, dude. I got my chickens.
Yeah, they're my family, practice.
Yeah, I know. I'm playing.
The people that have mold problems that need me to stay there.
And that's what I love about you, man. You got a heart for people, a heart for God. You're no bullshit. And it's really cool. And, but for me, I mean, it's such a serious, problem. You know, I practice what I preach. If you come to Salt Lake, come visit me. Like I'm going to actually launch my podcast out of my home. I'm going to move the studio, into my home because I want people to see that I practice what I preach. And the reason I left, because I was so serious about mold, I wanted to be in an environment where it was easier to, so if I get water leak in my house, I wipe it up, throw on some fans, I'm always at 30% humidity. It's gone. It's one less thing, because it's 70% of homes, according to experts, have significant enough amounts of mold that's going to make you sick. That's what experts say. And now you can look at, the EPA or WHO or, but their numbers are like 40%,
EPA says that, or is it NIOSH? I think it's NIOSH says that 50% of buildings in the U.S. are water damaged. And a lot of that research is taken from multiple studies, and they've, thrown all these studies together and did like a kind of meta-analysis of, where, how much mold or how much water or how much history of water damage is here or there. And it's kind of an average of half, one out of two. You just want to look at it that way. So you have a 50-50 shot. And I would say it's probably higher depending on a number of variable factors. I don't want to take away hope either. I think there's certainly places people...
We're here to still hope, Peter. This is our job today.
Yeah. So, but a lot of people, that's the thing. They don't get out of their mold because they fear they're going to just get into mold. Because they look at the statistic like that and think, well, I'm not going to spend all this money to do that and then, not know where I'm going to land. And that's a valid, logical argument to make. But sometimes less mold is better. And that's where a lot of times when people are getting out of it, like get out of it first, or get into a smaller environment where you can get your brain back. Mm-hmm. Because part of what happens in mold, it's so insidious in the brain. It steals your capacity for high function, right? So you don't make good decisions. And then you have a hard time making any decisions, like, because you get decision overload. You basically, you're so stressed at making a small decision, you can't handle it, right?
So the reason I want to back up right there, what you said is so important. And many people listening to this, if you're in a moldy home, it might go over your head because you have brain fog. And this is because you work with sick people and you help people through that. You give them energy. You help them make good decisions, because you literally, it's a neurological toxin that gives you massive brain fog. It's an inability. Your testosterone is in the bucket. You literally don't know how to make good decisions for yourself. It's almost like you're so sick that you're just going to continue to make mistakes. You'll make a rash decision or no decision at all. And it's so important when you're sick to find someone that you love and trust enough. Because when you're sick like this, you stop not trusting people either. Like, you get paranoid, and you need to find someone to have an advocate, whether it's a practitioner like yourself, a mold inspector that really knows what he's doing and really cares about people. Cause there's people with great hearts today. I think there's a movement towards, people just stop doing things for money, but actually deliver value so that fills their soul. And there's an equal value exchange. So there's people out there that'll be your advocate. And it was those people in my life that helped me make my decisions when I couldn't make decisions for myself. Financial decisions, relationship decisions. Like, when you're sick, you need advocates. You need people around you to speak life into you and to help you along the way. Don't do it alone. If you're too sick to make those decisions, find someone that you love and trust, that cares about you, that that is successful, right? That isn't fear-based, that says, we're going to find you a clean home. We're going to help you find, I'm going to help you find somewhere where you can live and get healthy again. Because you were right in saying that there's mold everywhere, and you can find safe homes. All homes are going to have some level of mold in it. But if you can get a much lower exposure to where your body can handle it, open your windows, whatever you need to do to get healthy again, and then you can slowly perfect your home over time. You're always going to, I just found a whole bunch more mold in my house, and I was, you know, doing relatively fine. None of us were sick, but my daughter had some inflamed lymph nodes. She was getting headaches. That's not normal for a 10-year-old. People think that that's normal and just give her aspirin. But I knew, and then I ran a Vibrant Wellness test on me, and I had elevated water damage mold. I don't know which one it was, but the mycotoxin. And I'm like, we have mold somewhere. So I found it, you know, and then I had an inspector cut into a wall, and we had a 4-foot, no, 6-foot by 3-foot section of mold that another mold remediation company, when I bought the home, because it did have mold, I bought a home with mold. Listen to that. Like, I'm a guy who's sensitive to mold, and I still bought a home with nasty black mold in it because I knew I could clean it up. And I got it cleaned up before I moved into it. Because just because it was there doesn't mean that you can't clean it up. It was an isolated area. It was really bad, but I had it ripped out, all the insulation, fixed all the water damage, the source of the water, tested everything, and then, you know, air scrubbed the whole home, fogged it with parasitic acid, wiped down all the flat surfaces. Yeah, there was some, probably, you know, some dead mold spores laying around, and it wasn't perfect, but moved into a home that had water damage because I knew I could make it safe. But the one section that they said was safe, this one section of wall still had that black mold in it. So my question to you is, like, I have a couple more questions before we wrap up. If that black mold is sitting in there, it was Stachybotrys inside of it, pasted in between two layers of drywall. Obviously, it was affecting my daughter, but how much worse would it be if it's dry? There's really no airflow through it. It just stuck between the walls and it's kind of dormant. Like, how bad would that mold be?
Bad.
Still bad.
Yeah, because mold really sporates better when it's dry. It's when the water's there, it can grow and garner resources. But with dryness,
it's fine trying to find a home.
Well, it's trying to spread itself out so that it doesn't go extinct. And so it's really good at sporating better when it's dry. So you get,
could it spore right through the drywall? Locked in?
Probably not. But, you know, drywall's not perfect either, and the houses move and shift. And so even if it's capped behind something, you're still going to get movement and potential, you know, potential spores coming through. And if you're, you know, your daughter obviously was symptomatic. So
she was, doctor was touching her lymph going,
what's much smaller than a mold spore is a mold toxin, right? So mold spores, on the order of magnitude, a mycotoxin is like 0.3 microns.
So tiny. Super, you can't filter it out.
Yeah, size of a virus, basically. Yeah. So could that move through that wall? You know, because it's not perfectly sealed. Those two sheetrock may be touching, but there's air in there.
Oh, there's air in there. Yeah. Yep.
And so those.
And it was dead-ended on mine.
Yeah.
It was actually three layers, and it was, you know, on two of the layers.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So, yeah, definitely would be toxic even in that type of situation. Yeah, so hopefully that answers it.
That does answer my question. It was disappointing, but I mean, I probably knew that was what you were going to say, but I just wanted to ask you because I know you know so much. So what are the three areas of a home that are most likely to have mold?
That's a great question. Number one would be the HVAC system.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that HVAC system being the lungs of your house are going to send that mold in every corner and nook and cranny of your house, right? So if you've got mold growing on your coils, now you've got mold settling in, mycotoxins and mold debris settling in on all of your furnishings and your carpets and your anything fabric based is just going to absorb those things into it like a sponge. So number one problem we see is HVAC systems being poorly maintained, Or if they're, depending on where you live, the practices, the building practices, they put those machines up in the attic. So you have this tremendous temperature variance between the hot attic in the summer and that 70 degree or 68 degree cold air inside your ducts. But if those ducts, if the seal on them breaks, then now you get hot attic air meeting cold 70 degree air, and that's condensation, right? You get a rain.
The water glass effect.
Yeah. So that's how a lot of times mold grows in HVAC systems. So to me, if you're trying, like, what's the low-hanging fruit that you could really keep your eye on to minimize it, is have your HVAC system maintained at least a couple of times a year by an HVAC company who understands mold.
Yeah.
You know, that would be one aspect. Other couple of common places, behind a dishwasher is a common one, because the leak will be subtle under a sink, kind of the dishwasher sink combo. You've got those pipes going through there very commonly, we'll see, especially in housewives where they're staying home and, you know, they spend a lot of their time cooking and they're right there over that sink next to that dishwasher. And they're the sickest one because they're right there in that locality. Bathrooms, of course, are always going to be a source of moisture because of hot showers. People,
kids showering,
adult showering,
yeah, adult male.
But the fans that they put and install, sometimes they just go right into the attic space.
Mysterious.
Where did that fan go? It went into your attic and it made your attic moldy.
Yeah. So that's another thing. It's like, if you have a fan, make sure it's, a lot of them, they just dead end them into the attic. And shouldn't be code anymore.
No, it shouldn't. It should be
of
the home.
I had one of those dead, like in my house in Pennsylvania. It was a townhouse. It was dead ended right in the old, and there's mold all over where it was blowing on all the insulation, and it was just all black mold. It's wonderful.
Yeah, always fun.
Every home I've been in, it's had mold.
Yeah.
Like visible mold, every single one. I've only had three. All of them had.
That doesn't surprise me. Bathrooms also, if you have a tile lining in like your shower, the grout that they use is supposed to be a water impermeable grout, but it's a really expensive grout. And so what a lot of builders do is they just use standard grout on those tiles. So
no, I'm scared because I think that's probably my house.
Yeah. If you don't know the answer to that, you should go and find the answer to that, because the likelihood that there's water emanating or seeping through that shower wall is very high. That was part of one of our problems as well. We had the wrong grout.
You just confirmed one of my fears. I'm like, I wonder if, you know, but just like everyone else, I'm busy. I don't want to deal with another problem. And I don't feel that sick right now. So,
yeah, you gotta be motivated by illness.
It's crazy. Yeah. Like if I start getting sick or I see my daughter, then I'll look, but I can empathize with, you know, people that they just don't want to deal with another thing in our lives. Right. But it's something we need to focus on.
Nobody wants to pull their head out of the sand and say it's mold, because if you know what that means, it's expensive. Probably. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes we get really lucky. It's just a real simple fix.
Just the removal.
But it's taxing. It's tough. It's expensive. And it may lead to a bigger finding. You know, you may think, oh, I'll have a little here. A lot of times when you start pulling things back and looking, that's when you start finding more and you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's what I had a little spot that I ignored in my bedroom. But after my daughter and after my test, I had it looked at, and of course it was much more mold than what I thought. It wasn't just a little dot, it was all through right in my bedroom. So I, you know, here I am, you know, and I taught functional medicine doctors mold remediation, you know, I'm an environmental, you know, scientist, master's degree, we dealt with mold, like I know all the things, and I still like get busy. I'm empathetic, I'm taking care of my family, bills, you know, all the things that we all do, and I, you know, we ignore things. Don't ignore mold, else it will get your attention quite quickly. So continue on, because these are great information, the grout thing, what other areas that are
any place where a pipe runs. One of the things that that breaks really quite frequently is that little valve that connects your toilet to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens to a lot of people, this is more of an obvious one, but you go off on a weekend and that thing breaks and you come home to a foot of water in your floor.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing that it's a guaranteed mold is going to grow because you've been gone long enough for it to grow. But check those valves. That's again, maintenance. We're talking about prevention.
Mm-hmm.
What people should really do is look for signs of condensation around just the general areas of their house. Cause another common area is windows, the window sills, the windows themselves, hot, cold variances between the indoor and outdoor air.
I have aluminum windows in some of the one side of my building. I get water buildup all winter long. I'm just constantly like, I'm talking a cup full of water in the winter that I have to wipe off. And now I have little fans, magnetic battery fans that blow on it at night. So I literally had a design. I was actually a mold remediator that told me you need to get little fans to blow on there so it doesn't do that. It'll evaporate the moisture. So I experienced that this is a big one with your windows and condensation.
Yeah.
Tons of black mold.
That and they install them improperly sometimes.
So no.
What happens is you get no weep holes around the window and mm-hmm. so then that's an invitation for water to seep in. I mean, those are pretty common. You know, outside of that, standard stuff, roof leaks, maintenance of a house. I mean, houses aren't perfect and they're certainly
not. They need to be maintained.
They have to be maintained. And I think in our throwaway age, everybody is so used to convenience. We've almost got a society where it's like, we expect so much, but we don't want to take care of things. And I'm not saying that as an insult to people. Mm-hmm. I'm just as guilty of it as anyone else. Just like, oh, if it breaks, it's cheap enough, we could just buy a new one. Like, that's the society we live in, right?
Correct.
When we grew up, our grandmothers and grandfathers were like recycling their glass bottles, right? They were really old school green, right? Mm-hmm. Today, we're talking about BPA-free bottle. Anyway, I want to diverge off of our topic. But maintenance. So get hygrometers. You can get them for $6, $7 on Amazon. Mm-hmm. They're not expensive. Put them in each room.
Which is humidity meters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that way you can get a footprint baseline for what kind of humidity levels are in your home, during
and you'll be surprised. You think that, one room is, 45%. You might have a couple rooms 60%.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially closets that don't have
airflow. Yeah.
Yeah. Because a lot of times the airflow is going in the main rooms, but you have that big closet and there's it's closed up and there's no movement. But put hygrometers in and then just kind of, you don't have to be paranoid about it, but check them periodically and kind of log down. Like what does this room look like on a regular basis? If it's regularly 45%, great. But if all of a sudden it's now at 50, 55%, look for the water, look mm-hmm. for the moisture. That's prevention. Have your HVAC checked a couple of times a year. If you do a nice garden bed around your house and you've got sprinklers,
you're screwed.
You better make sure the sprinklers aren't hitting your house. And that's, that's maintenance. You can have that if that's what you just need to have or want. But, depending on what the facade of your home is made out of, whether it's stucco or brick or wood or siding, look, that stuff breaks down and you can get places where water will permeate through. And so those sprinkler heads in your flower beds are sometimes a source of moisture coming into a damaged area externally.
They're huge. I was at I was filming studio, a friend of mine, and there's mold in his studio, but I saw the sprinkler hitting the side of the thing. I'm like, there's probably a ton of mold. I'm like, you can't do that. Like, you're going to get sick. Like, I went out and adjusted it and did it for him because I was just so worried, right? Because it's just blasting the side of his building, ruining your building, causing mold. But we just go about it and think, oh, it's no big deal. It's just water. No, it's not just water. It's nature and it's going to win.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it's left long enough. I mean, water finds a way in. I mean, it does. So if there's a crack or a nook that it can make its way into.
And then it'll freeze and thaw in the winter, have a little moisture.
And now you get expansion. So next summer when your sprinklers are back on, it just finds an easier hole. But house maintenance becomes very important. I mean, having a checklist, check your washer, washing machine. Those are places where mold grow. Mm-hmm. Where that hook goes in and the water goes into the wall. It's a common mm-hmm. place we find leaks. Make sure that underneath all of your sinks, you're looking. Mm-hmm. If you smell must underneath them, look for the water. I recommend putting in, and make latex trays that you can put underneath those sinks. Yeah. And so that way, if you do,
and they can hold up to like some of these trays, they're rated to hold up to like 2 gallons, a gallon of water. Yeah. So, and then I put moisture meters everywhere. Like I have them all through my house and they send off alarm. It's not high EMF. It's just a radio frequency, very low. I mean, it's still frequency, but I have them all over my house. And then if there's ever a detection, I have like 15 of them, and they're not that, they're not even that expensive, like $30 each. The thing that was expensive is the valve, but I integrated it in with my alarm.com system. The guy that, someone else, there's a company called out there, but they actually do this professionally. I'm like, I made it happen with alarm.com. It's $20 a month.
Yeah.
So it's my alarm system. And then I have at least 15 of these things. And if any of them get wet, it shuts off my main, my water main. So, I mean, I have a pressurized tank, so it will still get some water in my home, but I'm not going to lose more than, the biggest water leak I could have is 40 gallons, but just because the way my house is set up, but I literally, any of those go off, it shuts that off. And again, that wasn't that expensive, but I'm kind of, you know.
I think that it should be standard
to
me. I mean, water, we live with water. We want water. I mean, plumbing is an amazing thing for all of us, but it comes with the risks of mold. And so having
it's like driving a car comes with the risk of dying.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. So, high risk.
Yeah. So just maintenance.
Yeah. Maintenance. So what are the three myths about killing mold? What are three mold killing myths?
Don't use Clorox. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Mold is super resilient, and you're not going to kill it with fungicides or chemicals like Decon. Not effectively. You might get some of it to die back, but ultimately when you try to kill it, you're not going to be successful. And when you're killing some of those cells that are dying, those fragmented dying cells are just as pathogenic as the mold itself. Mm. So you're basically just creating debris that you're still going to react to. Mm-hmm. And with a false sense of security that you dealt with the problem. And if you use bleach and it's a black or a green or brown mold that has toxins in it, you're just bleaching it. So you're not getting rid of it, but you can, now you're turning it white. So it's your eyes are less apt to find it. So you're not really solving, you know.
And some problem. Of it's surviving.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So Clorox does not kill mold.
No, it's not what you want to use for mold remediation. You don't want to try to have some company come out and spray some type of antifungal fog.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if your goal is to get rid of the mold, you remove the mold.
Mm-hmm.
You don't kill it. Mold is not your enemy. Mold is doing its job. It's just, unfortunately, your house, something's wrong, and it's your cue to fix that. But you're not going to kill the mold by fogging it. You're just going to make it more volatile. You're going to make it release more mycotoxins because you're just going to, frankly, piss it off, mm-hmm. and it's going to try to protect itself just like you would if somebody came in and tried to rob you. So don't try to kill it. Try to remediate it. Remediate means removal. So when you have that there.
Physical removal wins the day.
Of the debris. That's it. And when you're removing it, make sure that you're, depending on the job, depending on the size of the remediation, like ideally it's not a do-it-yourself at home project. People mm-hmm. get hurt a lot of times doing their own remediation. I've seen it. That's not to say you couldn't do your own remediation. I would say it depends on the scope of the work. Mm-hmm. If it's just a small.
And how sensitive you are.
That too. If it's just a small area, you know, that's a pretty easy thing to do. But if you've got a bigger problem, a kind of a universal problem, if you try to fog that away, it's going to make your family sick.
Mm-hmm. No, you can't fog it away.
Yeah.
I like it for sanitation after all remediation is done. If there's a little bit of mold spore here or there, it also kills viruses. And that's why I like parasitic acid. But, company's called Pure Maintenance, and they're going to say that you don't need to, it works so well. They have the testing, and I love the guys. I'm friends with the owner, but we disagree on that one. I have seen people use it and they feel better for a little while and then they wind up getting sick again. And, so that's how I would recommend. You might be different than you, and we can definitely disagree, but
yeah, to me, remediation is removal. It's not sprays.
I agree 100%. You can never fog away mold. It's impossible.
Yeah. The, to me, the best way to fog after, if you want to fog with something, there's something called fine particle remediation.
That's what this parasitic acid is. It's really tiny particles that actually can like penetrate every crack and crevice and wall, and it's a fine particle.
And you want to pull, it binds those toxins that are smaller that float in the air that follow a different law of physics. And so it's like when you watch the sunlight come through the window and you see all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to pull all that to the floors.
So you can get it out.
So once you do that, you can use HEPA vacuums and you can pick a lot of that up, and it just really scours the air and cleans it more effectively. So that your family can come back into the house and be safer. Otherwise,
and lowering that toxic load in the home, the mycotoxins and all that.
Yeah, because that's just it. Some people are so sensitive that even with the proper removal and HEPA vacuums, like that stuff, that little particulate that's still kind of floating,
triggering
can still make them sick or keep them sick.
So number three myth when it comes to killing mold.
It's really just one myth. You just don't kill mold.
Yeah.
You don't kill it. Remove it.
Yeah.
So we can say don't paint kills over it, if you want to add another myth to that. Like some people
don't paint over it.
Yeah. Some people use a primer.
That's a huge, huge myth.
Well, they think the primer's going to
encapsulate.
A barrier.
We would do that with lead. We would have encapsulation, or asbestos. We would do encapsulation. The company that I worked with. And I know a lot of friends will do kills, right? Because it kills mold and it encapsulates it. So that's a huge myth. That's a really important one, actually. I haven't heard that one in a while. Forgot about painting over mold. That's what they do at hotels like this.
Yeah.
They paint over the mold.
They paint over the mold.
Hey, I have a water damage. I have some black mold, right, in my room. Oh, we'll send maintenance right off.
Yeah, we'll change your air filter. And
then he's painting over it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. Oh my gosh.
Don't seal your basement. That's another big
bonus. Don't seal your basement.
Basements, which generally are gone.
On the outside, you want to seal.
And you want drainage. You want water drainage. So water's going to emanate into the ground, right? So that concrete slab that is your basement that runs through the ground is not impervious to water. It's not about sealing the water out. If you seal the internal aspect of the basement, what ultimately happens is water's just going to push. And if your house is on top of that, it's going to shift and it's going to move and you're going to get water in it anyway. It won't fix the problem because hydrostatic pressure is not going to stop. So what's key with basements is to have external drainage on the outside. So as rain's coming down, you have to make sure that around the home where that water emanates into the ground, you have a really good drainage system set to remove the water away from the house.
Common name for that's a French drain.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's, drainage is key. My dad was an excavator and we used to put French drains in all the time and fix water damages in homes by putting pipe with holes so it would direct the water away. In Pennsylvania, it just rains. It's borderline rainforest. It's just so much water damage. If you build a home, if your home's at the bottom of a hill, you have all that hydrostatic pressure. My old hydrogeology degree coming out, and there's no way you're always going to lose if your house is at the bottom of the hill. You really need to have a massive drainage and be running almost like an industrial dehumidifier, not just like a little one you pick up at Home Depot, but ones that are, north of $1,000 that can, a 50 pint, a 50 pint, at Costco and a 50 pint industrial, it's five times the machine. And they can move a ton of water and keep it dry. That's what I did at my parents when I knew it was mold and I still had to live there until I could move out and stay with a friend. I bought it. I bought them a really powerful dehumidifier and, air filters, and I was still sick. Like, cause there's, mold was growing, that geometric mold was growing everywhere. There's just no way around it.
Yeah, you can reduce the water. Some people find it helpful, temporarily. You can reduce the water and filter the air, but if you're really mold sick, that's not remediation either.
No.
A lot of people try to, everything but remediation, and I get it, especially if you've got somebody telling you it's going to cost, tens of thousands of dollars.
If you had humidity in your walls and you have mold just growing on all your micro particles of mold growing everywhere inside your walls, you have to rip out all your walls and redo it all. That's a lot of work. You can HEPA vacuum it, but it's a lot of work. So how, let's give some people some hope. What are three things they can do to feel better after being mold sick? like the three fastest ways to start feeling better after your health's been impacted by
mold. How about fast and free? Number one, don't be scared to take naps. Don't be scared to sleep longer. 10 plus hours a night of sleep is one of the quickest ways to recover. Sleep is critical for healing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, we have a generation, depending on the age of the person, where some people are guilty for the nap. They're guilty for sleeping mm-hmm. in, you know, and so they have this sense of, I have to be doing something at all times. No, your body needs rest. You've been fighting a war, silent, microbial, invisible war. And to recover from that, you need rest. Number two, you need sunshine to recover. Mm-hmm. A lot of the detoxification of mold is about mitochondrial damage. So detoxification is a very energy expensive process. And if you have mitochondrial damage from mold exposure, one of the quickest ways to get your mitochondria back online is to expose them to light from the sun. Mm-hmm. You can buy infrared. Infrared is one of the key lights that ramps up, accelerates ATP production by your cells. But you can just go outside.
Yeah.
And when you're outside too, you're also getting fresh air, right? Because, you know, people say, well, there's mold outside too. Yeah, it's about dilution and concentration, right? Inside your house, you have a minimal quantity of cubic air space. Outside, you have trillions of tons of cubic air space. And so you have a dilution effect. So any mold or mycotoxins outside are diluted by the mass of air, but they're also being oxidized and broken down by OH negative ions that are naturally being produced as the sunlight hits the ozone. So that Mother Nature has this way outside of dealing with those toxins so that mold doesn't destroy the earth. But inside your house, you don't have those things. So go outside, get sunlight as much as you can without burning. That's also free. And then outside of that, open up your excretion channel. So, you know, make sure you're pooping and make sure you're peeing. So hydration becomes really critical, especially with electrolytes. When you're in mold, a lot of people suffer with electrolyte abnormalities mm-hmm. because of the way it impacts them. So hydrate with electrolytes. Urine movement is going to remove toxins from your body for free, right? So if you want to do the top three things to detoxify, I want you removed from the mold. But remember, you need to be removed from the mold. If you're still in it, these things are going to have a minimal impact
yeah.
because you're still being exposed. So again, sunshine is super free. Sleep is absolutely free. And pooping and peeing is also free.
Yeah.
But to pee more, and we want that at least initially, hydrating really well with electrolytes. If you're constipated, really, you know, next strategy there is I like to use vitamin C.
Yeah.
Because it's a natural osmotic, it'll pull water into the bowel and it's not habit forming. So it doesn't really create a scenario where you're changing the colon or changing the neurological control over how the colon works. You're just
like
pulling.
Gripping herbs, you know, like Casagera sagrada or something
that. Exactly.
They can be habit forming.
And vitamin C is also antifungal. So if you've been colonized by the mold, vitamin C helps. It's like fuel, rocket fuel for the immune system to fight fungus. So it serves as an add-on benefit. And if you've got mast cell activation because you've been in mold, vitamin C is a natural antihistamine. It helps stabilize mast cells. So there's just a lot of benefits to that. If you're looking at, you know, like supplemental support, it's typically tolerated by everyone. Like it's very rare for somebody not to tolerate vitamin C. There are other supplements people that have been in mold that don't tolerate very well, especially supplements that amplify detoxification, you know, things like methylated B vitamins and those are probably some of the more common ones that people in mold don't do well with while they're still in mold. But outside of that, some low-hanging fruit. I like binders. There's a lot of good ones. Fulvic acid, zeolite, bentonite clay. Just make sure you're getting a pure brand, something that is not contaminated with a bunch of other metals. But know, too, that just eating well contains binders. Like there's in fiber, there's binders, right?
Eating an apple.
Yeah. Apple pectin is what a lot of supplement companies now are,
they're
adding it as a kind of a binding agent. So you can eat well and detox. And remember, all the vitamins and minerals you need for detox are in your food. So part of recovery that isn't free, because we all have to eat and we all have to pay for our food, but it isn't more expensive. You know what I'm saying? It's not an added cost. It's just simply eat well. And, you know, for me, what does that mean? Organic, grass-fed, free range are kind of staple definitions. There's no perfect food. Mm-hmm. There's no super food or one food that, you know, that you need to only have or that is going to amplify this better than all other foods.
But that's just not what I read on Instagram.
Yeah, I know. All the memes are telling you which superfood they're selling you is going
to
be
the three top superfoods to remove mold from your body.
Every food is super.
Yeah.
Every food is a miracle. But you have to determine when it comes to diet, there's no one size fits all. I mean, I'm partial to no grain because it's been my experience clinically that number one, 30% of grain crops are contaminated with mycotoxins, and it's probably higher than that. Yeah. If you're already sensitized, eating grain while you're trying to recover from mold becomes an impediment.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
And then, outside of that, many people, because of mold, are reacting to gluten. And some people are just gluten sensitive regardless. But there's an interesting scenario that sometimes happens with mold. Because it's some immunosuppressive, you get colonization of yeast. We all have yeast in us. So,
right.
You know, yeast isn't evil. It has a purpose. We have something called a mycobiome, M-Y-C-O, which is fungal. We have a fungal microbiome.
Yeah.
And Candida is part of that. Now, what happens in mold is mold toxins specifically behave as antibiotics. That's what penicillin is. So we're breathing in antibiotics from our air every day. It's wiping out our healthy flora. The candida that naturally live in us anyway are growing out of control. Well, one of the proteins that candida produces is called a hyphal wall protein, HWP. It looks like gluten. Identical to gluten, if you look at it. So in science, they call it homology. It has homology sameness, right? So if you're gluten sensitive, you're out of your mold. You're still struggling. One of the most common reasons why is that you are over-colonized with candida. It's making proteins that mimic gluten. And if you've changed your diet and you're eating grain-free, great. If you haven't, it's just more fuel in that fire. But candida also produces gliotoxin. Gliotoxin is produced by Aspergillus and Penicillium. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those that we know damage the kidneys. It's a carcinogen. It inhibits DNA and RNA replication. So it stops you from basically being able to repair. If you have that overgrowth in you, it's going to continue to perpetuate your illness. So a lot of people, once they get out of mold and they still struggle, it's important to know that you might be colonized and, you know, you can suspect it and do some things that are kind of suppressive of fungal overgrowth, like caprylic acid, oregano. These are things you can eat.
Grapeseed oil, maybe.
Grapeseed oil has it. Thyme has it. It's a number of wonderful herbs that work for the plants to prevent fungus from overgrowing on the plants that also work in humans. But ultimately, I would say if you're still struggling and you're out and you don't know why, work with a mold literate doctor who understands this stuff and save yourself the next 2 or 3 years of trying to fix your leaky gut, because that's what we hear a lot. The doctors that really understand this well, when we talk and get together, it's like a good lot of the people that we see have been working on trying to fix their leaky gut for 3, 4, 5 years because they didn't seek out an expert help. And so they've lost that vitality of their life. And then they've also lost the thousands of dollars on protocols and supplements and things that haven't really been all that helpful. So it's not to say those things can't be, because I think there's something to being intuitive and trying to take ownership of your health and do the right things. But if you've been doing it for that long and you're struggling, like, it's time to seek out help.
Yeah. And that's a great way to end the show. So this has been amazing. And you do train doctors as well. So how can someone find a mold literate doctor? How can they find you? And I mean, I could talk to you for hours. Like, you're just starting to get into some of the cool science of the complications with mold illness and the little tricks and tips you can do to start feeling better. Because that's what ultimately we all want. We all want to feel ourselves again. We want to have energy. We want to sleep through the night. We want to be able to do the things that we love to do, have energy at the end of the day to stay up late and talk to our spouse instead of like you're both passing out in the bed and running this rat wheel, you know, and you're a great doc, you know what the hell you're doing. And you actually train doctors. So how can someone find you and some of the practitioners you train that really care about people? Because I know that anyone that's going to work with you actually are going to be good people.
Yeah. If they want to look for my practice, it's Origins Wellness.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just go to originshealthcare.com and that is, you can read more about what we do.
Yeah, I'm sure you have lots of great, even free information there as well.
And we have a lot of great free information for the mold community at moldjacked.com. moldjacked.com.
Yeah, Moldjacked is coming out soon.
Yeah, coming out soon.
Yeah, so it's been an honor, man, as always. Get to know you better, track you down, and put you in the chair. And we helped some people today, so thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you.
All right, brother. Have a great day.
Yep, you too.